projected winner of the U.S. presidential election, describes as totally irresponsible incumbent Donald Trump's challenge of the November 3rd vote results. Iran says it's ready to reverse its nuclear deal countermeasures if other parties to the accord implement their commitments and lift sanctions on Tehran. Also ahead, at least 16 people are killed in violent clashes between Ugandan security forces and supporters of a detained opposition leader. Thank you for joining us. Our top story: uncertainty continues to engulf the U.S. presidential election as projected winner Joe Biden slams as totally irresponsible President Donald Trump's challenge of the vote results.
I think they're witnessing incredible irresponsibility, incredibly damaging messages being sent to the rest of the world about how democracy functions. And I think it is... Well, I don't know his motive, but I just think it's totally irresponsible.
Are you concerned he may succeed? That people may...
Biden criticized the administration's refusal to give his team access to key federal agencies. He argued the obstruction is affecting his team's ability to create a plan to respond to the coronavirus pandemic. The former vice president has been projected by mainstream U.S. media as the winner of the White House race. Trump has rejected the call and declared himself the winner. He has claimed election fraud, launching several lawsuits in a number of states. However, many of those have either been withdrawn or rejected. On Thursday, the Trump campaign lost three court rulings in Georgia, Pennsylvania, and Arizona. Let's cross over to Washington, D.C., joined there by our correspondent Colin Campbell. With these lawsuits that Trump has lost, where do things stand now?
Well, he still has a few law cases that are still outstanding, and they're going to try to make an issue out of some of the software that was used to count the votes by a computer company called Domain, and they believe that some of the software was flawed. But in reality, the Trump campaign, the Trump administration, rather, really has very few options when it comes to being a victor in a lot of these cases. They are largely anecdotal, or they have some witness accounts, but they are very flimsy in actual evidence. And what these could move to, if they were even somewhat substantive, is moving on to an evidentiary hearing where they would have to provide all the evidence, meaning evidentiary hearing, that they would need to prove that there was some kind of fraud or some type of rigging. But they haven't been able to do that. That's largely why these cases have been thrown out. You need evidence to support a case. They don't have any evidence. They have a few, maybe some people saying that they felt that they saw something, but they couldn't prove exactly what they saw. Some people said there were some things they witnessed at a distance. It's just very flimsy evidence, if you could even call it that. And I think that's why some judges aren't even letting these cases proceed.
And Colin, just finally, breaking news reaching us from Johns Hopkins University that over the past 24 hours, the U.S. has registered 2,200 coronavirus deaths as well as 200,000 new cases, which I believe is a record. Biden saying that Trump is not playing ball when it comes to the transition. How is that going to affect the American people amid this coronavirus climate?
This could really, in a word, a couple words, more deaths. That's really what this will come down to. More than 250,000 people have died in connection with COVID-19. And researchers at Johns Hopkins, at Columbia University, at some of the leading universities and institutions and research facilities in our country have said that had we acted more proficiently in addressing the urgency and the high viral rate of COVID-19, a lot of lives could have been saved. And right now we have an administration that really could be doing more, but isn't. We have a president who's now obsessed with if he won an election that many have said he's clearly lost and that he will have no chances of ever trying to be a victor. that's where his mind is right now. It's not really saving the American people from further death. We do have a president-elect who's talked about a COVID-19 plan, but because of the recalcitrance from the Trump administration, he hasn't been able to have the communications as robustly as he would like to try to set up a scheme to try to stop the spread of the virus and to try to help people recover from a devastating pandemic that's hit this country. So, in a word, deaths.
Okay, Colin, thank you very much indeed for that. Colin Campbell there, our correspondent in Washington, D.C. And staying in the United States, there has been a dramatic political infighting among the Democratic Party following the electoral failure of their so-called blue wave. The Conservative Party is also in disarray as the major support for Donald Trump and the so-called Trumpian Republicans heralds a major shift. Rami Mazahari has more from Chicago.
Both mainstream parties in the United States have been profoundly shaken by the election results from November 3rd. While the Democrats may prevail in the still disputed presidential election, their so-called blue wave has been universally described as an abject disaster. Despite unprecedented mainstream media support, widespread leftist-based protests, and record fundraising, they failed to retake the Senate, lost seats in the House, lost one governorship, and failed to flip a single state legislature. Because this is a census year, Republicans will control drawing up most of the decade's new electoral maps, causing many to say the election was a disastrous setback for progressive causes.
70% of Republicans, 90% of Democratic voters are for Medicare for All. They're for the ending of student debt. They're for a UBI to sustain them, especially during COVID. So these things are very progressive, and the Democrats were against them.
Massive infighting among the party elite is being reported. Older and moderate Democrats blame newly popular progressive causes for the losses, but the Democratic Socialists of America, the left wing of the Democratic Party, won 70% of the races and ballot initiatives they endorsed.
The Democrats really aren't progressive. I would attribute their losses to putting up bad candidates, candidates that are very centrist. So this is the strategy of the Democrats, is we need to be more centrist or more rightist centrist, and they'll blame progressives.
The election results were widely expected to be a repudiation of so-called Trumpism, but analysts say they actually cemented the unprecedented political uprising unexpectedly led by Donald Trump. So-called Trumpian Republicans are now expected to reshape the Conservative Party. There seems to be unanimous agreement that regardless of the final outcome of the presidential election, Trump and his family will have increased, not decreased, control over the Republican Party. A pre-election poll asked Republicans and Republican-leaning independents if they considered themselves a supporter of Trump or a supporter of the Republican Party. 60% picked Trump.
Whichever presidential candidate is finally inaugurated, it seems certain that America has undergone a dramatic political shift, which few people predicted, and which many are struggling to understand and accept. Ramin Mazahari, Chicago.
Okay, we're staying in the United States, where 60 protesters have sued Chicago's police chief and several officers in federal court, accusing them of brutal attacks and false arrests. The 205-page lawsuit claims Chicago police officers violated protesters' constitutional rights and calls for the city's police department to pay them unspecified monetary damages. The suit accuses security forces of using brutal and violent and unconstitutional tactics against anti-racism protesters, clearly intending to injure, silence, and intimidate them. Demonstrations calling for racial justice and police reforms erupted across the U.S. after the killing of unarmed black man George Floyd by a police officer in Minneapolis in late May. Elsewhere, Tehran says the Iran nuclear deal has lost its balance of commitments due to Washington's irresponsible conduct and malign policies against the Islamic Republic. Iran's ambassador to the International Atomic Energy Agency said U.S. sanctions have deprived the Islamic Republic of the benefits perceived in the agreement. Kazim Gharib Abadi said Iran was ready to reverse its nuclear deal countermeasures if other parties to the accord implement their commitments and lift sanctions on Tehran. Gharib Abadi stressed that the landmark nuclear deal includes a central category of commitments, namely lifting of sanctions and their effects. Our Vienna correspondent Tom Alesky gave us an update with regards to the latest session of the IAEA Board of Governors about Iran's nuclear commitments.
But during the board meeting, there was a criticism against Iran in what the Europeans saw, as Iran's breaches of the nuclear deal, and that they were concerned that some of these actions that Iran is taking are actually irreversible. For instance, the fact that Iran is continuing its research and development, that it's producing and installing new, more advanced centrifuges and making them operational. So these were the criticisms that Iran was facing. And Mr. Ghalib Abadi, in response to this criticism, said that when there is no balance in the JCPOA, Iran is not left with any other option. When the U.S. withdrew from this agreement 2.5 years ago, since then, over all this time, he said, the Europeans and the other signatories of the deal have not managed to live up to their commitments. So Iran, basically unilaterally living up to its commitments and obligations in a deal where the other parties are not doing their share, you know, not lifting the sanctions, not initiating cooperation with Iran. These are the commitments that they've signed up for, to lift the sanctions and to cooperate, he said, in trade, in finance, in nuclear, peaceful use of nuclear energy, etc., with Iran. None of this is happening. And at the same time, Iran is under the maximum pressure policy of the U.S. administration, facing sanctions that have put an increased pressure on Iran because of the COVID situation. He said that the fact that the Europeans are silent about this, their inaction, even legally, carries a meaning. And this means that they are complicit in the pressure that Iran is facing.
Welcome back now. In other news, at least 16 people have been killed and 350 others arrested in 2 days of violent clashes in Uganda as security forces clamped down on protesters. Ugandan youths have been burning tires and blockading streets in the capital, Kampala, and other towns since Wednesday to demand the release of presidential candidate and pop star Robert Chavalani. Police used tear gas, live bullets and water cannons to disperse the crowd. Chavalani was detained on Wednesday while campaigning in the east of the African country in a bid to replace long-ruling President Yoweri Museveni. Ethiopia says its forces are tightening the noose around the capital of Tigray region as fighting in the northern region enters its third week. Prime Minister Abiy Ahmed's task force for the Tigray conflict also said they plan to bring back refugees from neighboring Sudan. Ahmed declared war on the region on November 4th, accusing the Tigray People's Liberation Front of launching attacks on federal military camps. Both sides claim military wins. However, verifying information from Tigray is hard because of a blackout on most communications. The conflict has forced tens of thousands of people to flee to neighboring Sudan. The United Nations has warned of a full-scale humanitarian crisis in the region. U.S. Secretary of State says the occupied Syrian Golan Heights belongs to Israel as he continues his controversial tour of Israeli-occupied territories.
You can't stand here and stare out at what's across the border and deny the central thing that President Trump recognized that previous presidents had refused to do. This is a part of Israel, a central part of Israel.
Mike Pompeo has become the first U.S. Secretary of State to visit the disputed region, which was seized from Syria in 1967. This drew strong condemnations from Syria, which described the move as provocative and a flagrant violation of its sovereignty. Earlier, the top U.S. diplomat also paid a visit to an Israeli settlement near the city of Bira, north of Jerusalem, Al-Quds. There, Pompeo reiterated Washington's support for Israel's settlement activities. The visit also made him the first top U.S. diplomat to visit Israeli settlements, which are considered illegal under international law.
Former U.S. Vice President Joe Biden has been projected the winner in the disputed U.S. presidential vote. That means in about 2 months, Donald Trump will have to hand in power to Biden. His administration, however, is using every opportunity to take controversial steps. On Thursday, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo paid a visit to an Israeli settlement in the occupied West Bank to further consolidate Israel's occupation of Palestinian lands.
During the Trump administration, America stands with Israel like never before. Indeed, the commitment we've made, the ironclad commitment we've made to the Jewish state, will continue.
Pompeo said the U.S. will label the boycott, divestment, and sanctions campaign as anti-Semitic and cancerous. He said Washington will require that imports from Israeli settlements in the occupied West Bank be labeled as made in Israel. In 2016, the United Nations Security Council adopted a resolution to reaffirm the illegality of Israeli settlements. Referring to Israelis as an occupying power, the resolution called on Israel to stop settlement constructions and abide by its obligations under international law. Later in the day, Mike Pompeo also visited the occupied Golan Heights, which Israel seized from Syria in a 1967 war. President Trump recognized Israel's sovereignty over the region last year. Pompeo's Thursday visits drew the ire of the Palestinians. A spokesman for Palestinian President Mahmoud Abbas slammed the U.S. labeling move as a violation of international law. Also, senior member of the Palestine Liberation Organization, Wassel Abu Youssef, said Pompeo's labeling announcement, quote, reaffirms the partnership between U.S. President Trump and the occupation. Another senior PLO member, Hanan Ashrawi, said Mike Pompeo's visit is aimed at setting another illegal precedent. Pompeo's visits to an Israeli settlement and the occupied Golan Heights were controversial enough. However, they are dwarfed by other anti-Palestinian moves taken by the Trump administration in the past 4 years. Trump announced Jerusalem al-Quds as the capital of Israel. Palestinians say the city belongs to them and is the capital of their state. Trump also relocated the U.S. embassy from Tel Aviv to al-Quds. The American president also showed unprecedented support for Israeli crimes, including bombardment of the Gaza Strip and killing of Palestinians across the occupied territories, setting new precedents in Washington's deep-seated and biased support for the Israeli occupation and crimes against Palestinians.
Elsewhere, the negotiating teams from the European Union and the UK have agreed to suspend Brexit talks after an official tested positive for the coronavirus. EU chief negotiator Michel Barnier said one of his team members has tested positive for COVID-19. The French politicians said they have decided to halt the negotiations for a short period before continuing them with a full observation of safety protocols. Barnier's UK counterpart, David Frost, has backed the decision, saying their first priority is the safety of their colleagues. The hiccup in negotiations happens as both sides seek to a post-Brexit trade deal by the end of the year. The main areas of disagreement between the two are fishing rights and competition rules. Staying in Europe, the German Chancellor says matters concerning Turkey's gas exploration in the contested eastern Mediterranean Sea have not developed as the EU had wished. Angela Merkel made the remarks following a virtual meeting with the European Union's leaders. She added that the leaders of the 27-nation bloc will discuss the issue at their next summit scheduled for December. Greece and Turkey have been at odds since August when Ankara sent a research ship to the eastern Mediterranean, which is claimed by Cyprus and Greece. Athens slammed the move as an illegal conduct and requested the EU to impose sanctions on Turkey. The bloc has denounced Turkey's activities in the disputed waters, but Ankara has extended the duration of the vessel's exploration multiple times since a brief pause in mid-October. That brings an end to our bulletin for this hour. Thank you for staying tuned.
a diverse range of programs. Youth, spirituality, culture, Eastern tales, roundtable discussions, politics. All produced by IRIB English Radio. Our website is www.parstoday.com/en.
In the limelight.
As allegations of election fraud continue to swirl almost 2 weeks since the U.S. 2020 election, the contours of a galvanized bipartisan ruling class in America are beginning to emerge in the wake of democracy's demise, says Raul Diego, writer, in an article published under the heading, Yes, U.S. Election Fraud is Real, and it's a long-standing tradition on both sides of the aisle. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. American democracy is in limbo after the long-anticipated contested election has finally come to pass. More than a week removed from November 3rd, Democrats and Republicans peddle their own version of events as a corporate media blitzkrieg tries to manufacture consent for Joe Biden as president-elect in true Guaido style. Trump plays the villain and cunt in Oval Office, while his cabinet officials pitch weak legal challenges that fail to address substantive issues of electoral fraud and serve to simply prolong the stalemate and build up the tension for the grand final. Despite evidence of fatal vulnerabilities underlying the electronic voting infrastructure of the United States that leave the systems at the very heart of the democratic process open to election rigging on a massive scale, much of the American public is unaware of the extent of the problem and how easily election results can be manipulated without leaving a trace. The bumbling incompetence of the Trump administration provides cover for machinations of the U.S. establishment, which more nuanced independent coverage has revealed in great detail. Taking the deliberate preparations made for this particular eventuality into consideration, complete with tabletop exercises and the creation of new federal agencies and programs since the start of 2016 presidential race, it is clear that the 2020 election was targeted as an opportunity to fundamentally transform the American political juggernaut in tandem with the ongoing worldwide economic reset. In a prolific time for draconian government overreach, one of the lesser-known pieces of legislation proposed by the Bush administration was the Help America Vote Act, HAVA, passed by a Republican-controlled House and a unanimous vote by a Democrat-led Senate in December 2001. The bill was signed into law 11 months later and greatly accelerated the full computerization of U.S. elections, according to Jonathan Simon, an election integrity advocate and author of Code Red, Computerized Election Theft and the New American Century, in an interview with Mint Press. Simon describes the legislation carrot-and-stick approach to goad states into adopting technologies like touchscreen voting systems known as DREs, which were later replaced by barcode systems or BMDs, which were entirely lacking in cybersecurity provisions to protect the increasingly concealed process it prompted. Among the bill's authors is none other than the current Senate leader and Republican kingmaker, Mitch McConnell, who has defended Trump's right to challenge the election results without committing to a particular outcome. If As was claimed, Simon continues, HAVA would make voting easier and thus increase turnout, as we can see clearly today that was decidedly not a GOP goal, certainly not of a tactician like McConnell. The partisan motivation Simon ascribes to HAVA are clear enough, and, as he points out, should have been clear to Democrats as well. But the argument that the American liberal establishment had no inkling of the ramifications fails to account for Democrats' own forays into the closely held universe of electronic voting systems. A week ago, Fox anchor Maria Barrett Romo casually let slip on air, and House Speaker Nancy Pelosi's chief of staff, Sidney Powell, had become a lobbyist for Dominion Voting Systems, one of a handful of companies that maintain a close-knit cartel of electronic voting systems, which together control 92% of the election marketplace. Nevertheless, Dominion's market share is dwarfed by ES&S, the largest election voting machine company in the United States, and whose subcontractors that do the actual programming, maintenance, and distribution are controlled by GOP political allies, according to Simon. The wrangling these firms engage in to steal electoral markets from each other and the inseparable political problems such dynamics can cause was on full display in Louisiana just before the 2018 midterm elections when its Democrat governor, John Bel Edwards, canceled a $95 million contract that had been awarded to Dominion after competitor ES&S filed a complaint about the contracting process. Edwards was accused by his Republican Secretary of State of siding with his political bodies over election security, which contradicts the prevailing notions of a pure partisan split along this issue. Experts on both sides of the political divide concede that both voter fraud and election fraud occur with considerable frequency since the advent of electronic voting machines. In addition to Dominion and ES&S, only five other companies dominate this space: 10X, SGO, Smartmatic, Hart InterCivic, Dimtech, and Premier, formerly Diebold. Virtually all have been accused of vote count manipulation or other irregularities associated with their systems. Hart, for instance, was accused of vote flipping, the practice of switching the votes from one candidate to their opponent in Texas. Dominion also ran into issues into Lone Star State when its systems failed certification over accessibility problems. Much of the equipment being used to record and count votes, explains Jonathan Simon, is either modern equipped, which leaves it highly vulnerable to remote interference, or programmed with the use of other computers than are internet connected, allowing the alteration of memory cards and code running in either precinct level machines like BMDs, DREs, or optical scanners or central tabulators. Examples of these dangerous weaknesses were explored in a recent video published by self-styled national security professional L. Todd Wood, where conservative election security expert Russ Ramsland breaks down his findings from a forensic analysis of 1,000-page voter log taken out of Dallas County's Central Tabulation Center in the aftermath of 2018 midterm elections. Ramsland identified instances of votes being replaced in 96 precincts, an inordinate number of database updates, and other serious irregularities that point to vote count manipulation and amount to election fraud. His most explosive allegations centered around claims of real-time vote swapping in 2019 gubernatorial election in Kentucky, where Ramsland asserts that thousands of votes originally given for the Republican candidate were swapped live on a CNN broadcast and added to the tally of the Democratic candidate Andy Beshear, who would end up winning the election. Ramsland also alleged that the election data of that race was being stored in a server in Frankfurt, Germany, before being cycled through the central tabulation database, which syncs automatically with the numbers shown to television viewers. This server has been pounced on by Trump supporters in recent days and repeated by Rudy Giuliani in his podcast when he also purported to have direct evidence of election fraud. While it is practically impossible for the layman to unravel the complexities underlying the encryption and cloud technologies underlying the present-day election system in the United States of America, few can doubt that moving towards a digital voting system removes whatever last vestiges of control the regular American citizen had in a once participatory exercise of democracy. Asked if democracy can even exist under such conditions, Simon refers to a prediction he made in Code Red, in which he argues an inexorable progression to where we are now, public trust eroded, the losers making wild allegations, no one able to prove anything, and everyone kind of waking up to the realization that U.S. concealed computerized vote counting process does not yield evidence-based results. Giuliani's promises of whistleblowers coming forward to save the day for MAGA crowd and call the election off aren't likely to produce anything of consequence, as this charade only serves to further pave the way for the ruling classes who are consolidating their grip on power and wealth at mind-boggling speeds thanks to the peculiar advantages bestowed upon them by the pandemic protocols. Real evidence of election fakery is too widespread to confront as part of a national discussion, as that would threaten the position of the politicians who depend on a rigged system and the powerful interests that control them. With the extremes of the American political spectrum lighting up in deep reds and blues, whatever emerges out of the ashes won't resemble much that came before it. And regardless of the election results, America's inexorable march towards techno-fascism is moving right along. Actual voter and election fraud takes place in every national American election and is just as prevalent in state and municipal elections as well. From vote splitting to voter suppression tactics to direct manipulation of election results, both political parties have usurped the electoral processes to lie and cheat their way into power more than once. But with the advent of digital voting systems, even the scandals we always seem to hear about far too late will vanish from sight as well. The most straightforward aspect of democracy, voting, is disappearing behind a curtain of ones and zeros that only technocratic lackeys will be able to pull back. Trump, who was plucked from the reality TV screen like Jeff Daniels in the Purple Rose of Cairo and inserted into the national contest for the highest office in the land, will do nothing to change that. Publicly available FBI documents show the sitting president has been an FBI informant since the early 80s, and his rise to the highest office in the land was not the case of a brash independent billionaire who decided to run for president to make America great again. After all, Donald Trump's long-standing ties with a very deep state, many of his staunchest supporters are convinced he is dismantling, actually reveals a factional war among the ruling class behind the scenes. With a president who is as deep state as it gets, if there is something we can take away from the last 4 years and these last few days since the election, it's that the American establishment's over-the-top partnership has been a ruse undertaken to hide the fact that they are united in waging a class war like never before.
food for thought.
Hello everyone, and to begin the day we present you a bezel of wisdom from the Holy Prophet's 8th infallible heir, Imam Ali ibn Musa al-Rizal, peace be upon him, and respect for parents. God punishes people for two sins in this world, injustice and ungratefulness towards parents.
This is IRIB English Radio. Please log on to our website, www.parstoday.com/en.
This is A to Z. An introduction to Islamic lifestyle. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In the name of Allah, the Most Beneficent, the Most Merciful. Dear brothers and sisters, Assalamu alaikum. Peace and blessings of Allah be upon you all. This is A to Z, coming to you from IRIB English Radio, and I'm your host, Ali. This radio show is about Islamic lifestyle, and in each episode, we will be talking about a different lesson. Please stay with us till the end of today's program. Today's lesson, whining and complaining. Brothers and sisters, some people start whining and complaining even before the difficulty or trial begins. How many times have we seen that? You know, people complaining all the time, people whining all the time. Well, Imam Baqir alayhi salam, the fifth holy imam, has said, whining or complaining is one of the deeds of the age of ignorance. One shall not complain about the difficulties, rather he shall try to solve them. This short and meaningful tradition has an outward and an inward sense. Its outward refers to the irrelevant actions being popular at the age of ignorance. When somebody died, mourner women were invited to lament on his death by reciting their special songs and deceitful and false poems. And the other meaning, which Imam Baqir alayhi salam may refer to, is that mourning and complaining for hard and difficult events and problems of personal and social life is useless and causes waste of energy and facilities. Instead, one should spend that energy to solve the problems, seeking a remedy by the strength of intellect and thinking, as well as continuous effort and tolerance. So, brothers and sisters, the lesson for us in today's segment is that we should not be whining, we should not be complaining, we should be rather focused on solving the issues, using the intellect and all the other facilities that Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala has provided for us. We need to utilize them to get to the solution of the problems we face in our lives. Welcome back to your listeners. Today we are discussing the issue of whining and complaining. How many people do we know around us who are used to and accustomed of doing these two things? Well, we said that our energies are a gift of God, and these energies are a trust of Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala that He has granted to us. All of these faculties that we have are in our body, for instance, and all of those blessings that Allah has given us, they're not to be consumed for whining and complaining. Rather, the purpose of these faculties and these blessings is to assist us and provide us a foundation and support to be able to deal with those issues and problems and challenges at an individual level or at a social and societal level. Complaining and whining can be distinguished by the nature of the dissatisfaction and by our motivation for expressing it. Complaining involves voicing fear and legitimate dissatisfactions with the goal of attaining a resolution or remedy. When we voice legitimate dissatisfactions but do so without the goal of attaining a resolution, we are merely venting. Realize that. And when the dissatisfactions we voice are trivial or inconsequential and not worthy of special attention, we are whining. So today, we explain for you venting, whining, and complaining. And a reminder that we are not to do these things. Rather, we are supposed to invest ourselves in resolving the challenges of life, let it be our individual life or our societal life. Dear listeners of IRIB English Radio, thank you very much for staying with us till the end of today's episode of A to Z. Don't forget to log on to our website at www.parsetoday.com, Call of Islam page. We leave you all in the care of Allah. Till next time, wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
summits like Davos in the desert, held in Riyadh in October 2019, was in fact the kingdom's desperate effort to lure foreign investors. But the stakes are high in the kingdom, where the royal family is still above the law. Any legal dispute with Al Saud princes may put a businessman's trade and life in ruins. This is exactly what happened to Gary Arnold, a British entrepreneur who introduced English fish and chips to Saudi Arabia. Gary Arnold, 50, was arrested in Dubai in October. He is now languishing in a police cell without access to his phone. He's facing 8 charges for unpaid debts from creditors to his company, including one that carries a maximum 2-year jail sentence. And this is not what the young Gary hoped when he went to Riyadh some 20 years ago. Arnold launched his fish and chip business in 2000 under the name of London Business Group, growing it to 36 branches in malls across Saudi Arabia, the UAE, and elsewhere in the Middle East. In 2017, the Saudi's royal family company, Harbor Holdings Hima Foods, decided to buy out Arnold's successful business under a deal valued at about 30 million riyals, or 7 million pounds. Arnold should have received 6 million riyals as an existing partner. But the merged business struggled to meet its liabilities without the Saudi cash injection, culminating in March 2018 with Arnold's arrest and detention for 5 days in UAE for a missed payment on a bank loan. His passport was then confiscated and he got a 2-year sentence in absentia.
You have to have confidence in the rule of law. You have to have confidence that there's consistency and there's justice underpinning the country. And no investor in their right mind would dare take a chance of rolling a dice in entering an environment where that does not exist, or it only exists in the breach. And it seems to me that Saudi Arabia is run by diktat, at the whims and fancies of these Saudi princes, and that the law is there to serve their whims, not there to constrain or restrain their excesses. And investors require confidence, they require stability, and Saudi Arabia lacks all of the above.
Arnold's ensuing legal dispute pitted him against a high-profile family of Saudi royals, central to which is Prince Faisal bin Bandar bin Sultan bin Abdulaziz Al Saud, the current chairman of Harbor Holdings. 2 other royals linked to the company are its ex-chairman, Prince Khalid bin Bandar Al Saud, Saudi ambassador to London, and its co-founder, Princess Rima bin Bandar Al Saud, Saudi ambassador to Washington.
Well, very little. These princes, as I say, lord over the country. The country is buttressed by 2 extremes: extreme decadence and ostentation on the part of the royal family at one end, and extreme religious sectarianism and medieval barbarism at the hands of the Wahhabi religious apparatus at the other end. And in between, you have people being squeezed as in a vice. And so in such a scenario, you are playing with fire when you enter the legal system there. I don't think it's a legal system. I think it's more a system of brutality that comes with the patina of legality. And as I say, this will send every right-thinking foreign investor running for cover rather than invest in such a country.
According to Arnold's lawyer, Toby Cadman, London Business Group was a very successful business that the Saudi Arabian Royals Company has destroyed through negligence or incompetence. Before his arrest, Gary Arnold had an interview with The Telegraph about his now miserable situation, which shed light on what the Saudis would like to hide behind their glitzy summits. This is Arnold's experience after 20 years of working in Saudi Arabia and interacting with the royal family. These are high-profile individuals who seem to be under the impression that they can dump their responsibilities and ignore our exposure. I have been shouldering their liabilities for the last 3 years. Despite numerous promises, both written and verbal, they haven't met their responsibilities. It has left us without a business and without an income. It has left us trapped in a country which we no longer want to be part of, and separated from our family and loved ones. I have had to send my family back to London and am unable to pay the school fees and my housing costs. My residency visa has expired, and the Saudis continue to say they're going to pay, then don't, which is unacceptable.
This development, the plight of Gary Arnold, will send a chill down the spine of every putative investor into Saudi Arabia. And it only confirms that even though the country or the state has made a great boast of modernizing under the rule of Prince bin Salman, it's only modernizing its illegality, modernizing its corruption, and modernizing the arbitrariness of rule by diktat by various Saudi princes, of which there are a great number. And so I think this is going to be a wake-up call for the international investment community when it comes to their dealings with Saudi Arabia. This is just further evidence that Saudi Arabia is less a state and more a vast criminal enterprise masquerading as one.
The money still failed to materialize despite personal commitment to proceed with the deal with Prince Faisal in June 2018, in which he acknowledged some financial circumstances have happened which prevented him from transferring the shares and paying the remaining amount. Now, Katman is trying to put pressure on the royals to pay the money they owe the businessman. But according to him, it is going to cost Mr. Arnold and his business partner tens of thousands of pounds, all of which has been caused by the Saudis. The failure of the Saudi royals company to keep its part of the deal has left Gary Arnold facing financial ruin, a jail sentence, and reposition of his home for unpaid debts, as well as being separated from his family and unable to return to the UK due to the confiscation of his passport.
I just think that we have reached the end game when it comes to Saudi Arabia. We should have reached this point after the vile murder by Bonesaw of Jamal Khashoggi in the Saudi consulate in Istanbul a couple of years ago. But the Trump regime covered that up, because money talks, and money in the West is seen as more important than human life. But there are increasing clamour amongst people, increasing awakening as to the character of Saudi Arabia. And despite the attempt at sports washing, holding like big boxing events and other sporting events in Saudi Arabia, I think the rot is set in. Saudi Arabia is trying to win the favour of Western investors, businessmen, corporations. It wants to replicate what's going on in Dubai, but I don't think it will be possible to do that because of the character of the state, a state born in blood, nourished by blood, and which feasts on the blood of innocents in its own country and in the region.
The question is if the story of Gary Arnold is due to the misconduct of some bad apples in the Saudi royal family, or it is part of the game in the authoritarian kingdom of Saudi Arabia. Isn't Arnold's story somehow similar to the Ritz-Carlton arrest story, where hundreds of Saudi businessmen were arrested and tortured before their properties being confiscated?
This is the voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran broadcasting. Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran is broadcast daily, round the clock, for listeners across the globe. The Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran can be heard via the internet, shortwave, medium wave, FM, and satellites. Our listeners in the Indian subcontinent can listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 41 meters, 7,300 kilohertz every day from 1520 to 1620 UTC. Also, our listeners in Europe can tune in to the English service of the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran via shortwave 49 meters, 6,040 kilohertz, and in Southern Africa via shortwave 25 meters, 11,880 kilohertz every day from 1920 to 2020. Our listeners in Tehran can also listen to our programs via FM 91.5 megahertz. You can also listen to the Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran on Hotbird, Eutelsat 3B, and IranSat or Bat 5 and via the internet. Our internet address is parstoday.com/en. And now you can listen to IRIB English Radio via your mobile phone. Please refer to our website for the details. Please send your correspondence to the English program, P.O. Box number 19395-6767, Tehran, Islamic Republic of Iran, or email us to englishradio@irib.ir. We would be very pleased to have your comments about audio quality and other means. Thank you. In the limelight.
Less than 2 weeks after the Category 4 Hurricane Eta devastated communities in multiple Central American countries, Hurricane Iota was declared a Category 5 storm on Monday, November 16th, as it barreled toward the same region, prompting meteorologists, scientists, climate campaigners, and local leaders to reiterate the necessity of addressing human-caused global heating. Dear listeners, this was part of an article written by Jessica Corbett Ryder. This article is published under the heading Unreal and Heartbreaking. Experts highlight climate crisis connection as Category 5 Hurricane Iota barrels toward Central America. Stay tuned for the details of this article, please. Less than 2 weeks after the Category 4 Hurricane Eta devastated communities in multiple Central American countries, Hurricane Iota was declared a Category 5 storm on Monday, November 16th, as it barreled toward the same region, prompting meteorologists, scientists, climate campaigners, and local leaders to reiterate the necessity of addressing human-caused global heating. The U.S. National Hurricane Center, NHC, said at 7 p.m., local time, that the western eye wall of Category 5 Iota is over Nicaragua, warning that catastrophic winds, life-threatening storm surge, and torrential rainfall are occurring in Central America. Maximum sustained winds are near 160 miles per hour with higher gusts, and little change in strength is expected until landfall.